Hey, it's Scott MacArthur, co-host of Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mac. If you're hearing this, please follow the link in the show description to subscribe to our new feed for more great sports talk and interviews from Ashley Docking, Mike Zigomanis, and me.
Thank you for calling Pizza Pizza.
Yes, I'd like to make a reservation for four.
I'm happy to take your order, but you don't need a reservation.
Excuse me?
You want to try the new gourmet thins, right?
How'd you know?
This has been happening a lot lately. It's a 10-inch thin crust, perfectly sized for one. Or get a few to share, like creamy truffle or pesto amore. And sir, no jacket required.
What about a tie?
New gourmet thins, $7.29 each. Call or order with the app for pickup or delivery only at Pizza Pizza.
9671111. Order pizzapizza.ca.
Lead off with Ashley.
She is fun, works hard, and plays thoughtfully. She is impossible. She is girl to the max.
Ziggy.
And supposed to be a very good guy, from what I understand. I don't think I've ever met him.
You have met him.
I have met him, okay. So I don't remember meeting
him. He's a big fan.
And Scotty Mac.
You're a funny guy.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Right, did everybody around the table have a healthy weekend? Has everybody come through without any significant injuries?
Yes. I'm 2-0 on the weekend. Nobody got hurt at U of T. Successful road trip.
I
didn't get hit with a puck in RMC. I'm good.
I stubbed the you-know-what out of my toe.
Did you really?
On my bedside table. And like, oh, yeah. No, for real. It was, you know, I got me to thinking, do toes go through more than any other body part, honestly? Because I've knocked the crap out of my feet numerous times. You're like, oh, I'm going to look down and it's going to be on a 90 degree angle. Has to be.
No, there's sometimes you stub your toe and it's like, I put my hands up. It's like, it's broken now. I'm not even going down for it. I'm calling the doctor, and you get like 3 seconds later. It's like, okay.
No, it's literally like, just take me now, Jesus. No, just go ahead. I'll ascend.
But aren't like
or descend depending.
40% of your toes already gnarled, Ziggy?
Yes, I'll blame Paul Coffey on that one. And I'm glad we had him in the studio last week to address him about that situation.
That the reason you keep walking into yourself is because of Paul Coffey's skates.
This guy, he wears his skates small and he skates that way. All the kids are going to do it. Come on.
Because they were made of newspaper and absorbed every single piece of condensation available to them. That's why. An old leather boot. You're good too?
I'm fine. Yeah.
Unscathed?
I came through the weekend relatively unscathed.
Great.
I'm happy to say that. Unlike our sports teams.
Oh my goodness.
So...
let's run it down.
Like, I mean, I don't even know where to begin.
We'll start with Jozy Altidore, who had been out for a number of weeks. He did make his appearance in the MLS final.
And scores.
The Toronto FC end up losing 3-1 anyway. But that's kind of where I would start off.
Okay, so him with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Raptors go down to New Orleans. And you can get yourself into some trouble down in New Orleans, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you can get yourself hurt in New Orleans, but usually it's not at something called the Smoothie King Center. Usually it's down on Bourbon Street. Kyle Lowry suffers a small fracture in his thumb, so he's gone pretty much for the rest of November. I mean, at least 2 weeks. Serge Ibaka sets an ankle trend for the weekend, badly sprained right ankle. In fact, he was leaving Smoothie King Center in a walking boot, so he's going to be out longer than Lowry, I think it's fair to say. And if there's a worse injury, other than like a really badly torn ACL or something, if there's a worse injury than a high ankle sprain, name it. And then Mitch Marner, Saturday night against the Flyers, and we got to get your thoughts on that play off the faceoff. Was there any shenanigans going on there? I don't think he stepped on that stick. I think he got tripped, and his right leg folds underneath him. And I told you I can do blood. Mm-hmm. I can't do stuff like what Marner.
No contortionists for you?
Yeah. The fact that adrenaline even allowed him back onto the ice to take a twirl in the next commercial break to see if he could still play tells you something. But it is the worst case scenario or close to it. He's got a high ankle sprain and he's down for at least a month.
Well, the high ankle sprains are funny, right? Because a lot of times when it goes on you, it kind of goes, and then you're fine. You feel fine. Sometimes you can even walk. You don't really feel it that much. And then once you start moving around and you start going laterally, that's when you feel it. And I've had one of them before. And the reason they're so bad, I don't know if you remember Sidney Crosby, when he had one, he would come back after the 4 or 5 weeks and you feel totally fine. And then it's just you push it past that limit on a lateral movement and then it's gone again. But you think you're fine. So that's why they say these are funny injuries, and they sometimes you don't know what you have with them, is because a lot of time they're repaired, you're back to 100%, but it's not totally there. I don't really know how to kind of dig into that, but that's one of those injuries where it's not like you break a hand. It's like, okay, you get the x-ray, it's healed, you're ready to come back, or a groin pull or a separated shoulder. It's one of those things where you think you're fine, but you're not. So you try to give it that extra couple weeks, which is, how hard is that to do as an athlete, right?
Impossible. Yeah. So it's like muscular exhaustion, tendons not being as stable as you would have otherwise liked. I'll be opening my private practice, Ashley Doc AMD, in case anyone's wondering. But that's, you know, those are my two cents.
Right next to Doogie House.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, me. I was going to say Matlock, but he's not the doctor I'm thinking of. Who's that old doctor? White hair.
From a TV show?
Yeah. It's like a really old school pull. I can't think of it right now. Anyway.
But, yeah, but you want to come back, right?
No, of course you do. Yeah. That's just anyone who likes what they do or has a passion for what they do or who gets paid very well to do what they do. This problem for the Maple Leafs is 30-fold almost, because it's not just like you're losing your best playmaker, someone who was part of a line that was the best 5-on-5 line in hockey last year, and that should be enough to make you weep in front of a box of Oreos on a Saturday night in the dark, right? But then you think of the fact that Mitch Marner is also on the power play and he's an integral part of that. And then you remember, oh, right, last year he told Mike Babcock, hey, put me on the PK. I think I can really help. So now he's eating up penalty kill minutes and he's been exceptionally effective in that role also. So it's an all well and good to say, oh, next man up, it'll give an opportunity for someone else. But it's not as though Mitch Marner is average in these skills. He's very good at everything that he does. So even though you have the next man up and you might find a diamond in the rough with someone that you didn't think could otherwise handle the task, he's still not going to be as good as Mitch Marner in 99% of the cases.
Well, he's my driver for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's my number one. When people ask me who on this team, I love Matthews, I love Tavares, Riley does great things on the back end. Norris conversation last year. Anderson's one of the best in the league, but he's my, if I had to rank my top 5-6, he is number one.
And he's not had, by his standards, a great start to the season.
And it's tough. And we've talked about signing the new contract comes with a lot more expectation. You're looked to do more than what you've done. And I think that's the issue with a lot of these guys in Marner's position, is that they've been so great that when you sign that big deal, all the fans are like, all right, what now? Remember when Nylander signed his $7 million deal a year, $7 million a year? Everyone's like, okay, let's see something else now. And usually it goes the other way. You have a little bit of, you know, that pressure that's added onto you. You're expected to score more goals, make more plays, make something out of nothing. And a lot of times it doesn't happen. So that's the hard part when a lot of these guys sign their deals and we want something more out of them. It just doesn't happen. So Marner's going a bit through that right now. And once he's back from injury, he'll be fine.
It was an incredibly busy weekend. The Raps playing Friday and last night, the Leafs playing Saturday and last night on the back-to-back. So we've got a lot to chew on, and I can't help but sit here and juxtapose the two teams right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Toronto Raptors going to Los Angeles last night. Braun is playing. The Brow is playing. And a bunch of a combination of undrafted free agents, G League developmental players, a little CanCon with Boucher.
Reclamation projects.
These guys just grind it out and get it done on enemy soil. This Lakers team is better than the one that they had last year and for the last few years. The Raps go out there, gut it out, get it done. Now, is that sustainable over the next little while without Kyle Lowry and for a longer term without Serge Ibaka? Only time is going to tell. But we're sitting here dealing on a Monday morning with what we've just seen. Small sample size. They went and got it done. The Chicago Blackhawks were on a back-to-back as well. And whatever the hell that was in the first period last night from the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's just the same old story. I know Mitch Marner is hurt, but come on. You got the Raptors grinding it out, and you got the Leafs doing the stuff they've been doing here for the first month of the regular season.
They look tired. They came out flat. It's a deeper issue than just not coming out. I thought a lot of guys looked tired. I know a lot of the role players, a lot of the Mikheyevs and Moores and Timoshovs, the guys you expect for forechecking and to really, in games like this, you want them engaged to get the team going. And I thought Moore looked as tired as I've seen him all year. A lot of guys look sluggish. Muzzin with the giveaway off the faceoff. And we were talking about that. That's one of the things where, as a centerman, you get a clean win like that, the puck has to get out.
You're talking about Chicago's second goal, yeah. Just to be clear.
And it's just one of those plays where, hey, and I love his physicality and what he does. And the big hit he threw right away, I was like, okay, that's kind of what I'm looking for. And these back-to-backs, especially on the road, you need guys to come out and play physical. And he comes out with a big hit right away. And I love that. And I was like, okay, maybe this is going to get these guys going in these games where they don't have a win this year in back-to-backs. Mm-hmm. So, and you see that, and it's
and then just, you went to go get a pop, and then you came back, and it was 3-0.
Yeah, 3-0, yeah. And they
essentially, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have the Strome, DeBrinket, Kane line amassing 8 points in the first 20 minutes of the game. That's a hard thing to accomplish in 60 minutes, never mind the first third of the game. And Scott, to your original point, it is an interesting comparison because you can even draw more parallels in the sense that the Raptors were playing with a depleted lineup and they were depending more on their bench. Nick Nurse said, I guess I have to learn to trust some more people here tonight.
And a bench he hasn't much used so far this year.
You had 10 people getting in the game. Stanley Johnson, to a lesser extent, he played less than 3 minutes. But then you had the first real extended run we've seen of Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Chris Boucher, who you mentioned, he had a number of blocks. He was really great defensively. He had a clutch three-point shot, even though he was only 1-for-4 on the night. Terrence Davis looked like a bat out of hell. He was great. But you have players that are coming in knowing that they have a lot of ground to cover. It's really difficult to replace a Kyle Lowry. It's really difficult to replace a Serge Ibaka. And then you have the Leafs, who in a similar instance are playing without a Mitch Marner, so they know that they're depleted. They're playing with their backup goalie, so they know they don't have as much reliability on the back end. And instead of playing a more astute brand of hockey, knowing your shortcomings are going to be amplified in this game, no matter who your opponent was, instead of really buckling down and deciding to play smarter and deciding to really, I guess, just bolster your back end, they didn't do that. And you can say that Michael Hutchinson needed to be better in goal, and absolutely, that's fair. There were some things that he didn't do well. He didn't control rebounds that well. There was, I believe it was the second goal where you're like, yeah, you got to make that save, you got to gobble it up kind of thing. But they hung him out to dry. And if you know that you're not going to get a game-swinging save a la Frederik Andersen because Hutchinson is a, like, minimally paid backup goalie, you need to be cognizant of that and not take the same risks. And maybe it's not fair, and maybe that's not how things are supposed to go because you shouldn't have to tailor your game depending on who's in the lineup. But if that's your reality, then yeah, that is what you have to do. And you know who probably changed a couple of things? Nick Nurse probably changed a couple of things in the way they are running. He probably simplified the game down for those guys, knowing that it's not going to be the same reliable people that you can depend on in the mix.
Well, the Nick Nurse comments were, I want to know what you guys thought of this, is what did you think when he's like, I like 8 guys, but besides for that, I just don't know who. Yeah. I just thought that was kind of, I mean, I understand what he's kind of saying. Hey, there's 8 guys I usually go with. And who else can I go to after?
Well, and he's been going with a really short bench all season. So the words back up what we've seen. But now the situation dictates, not just with the injuries, but we talked about this on Friday before we knew that Kyle and Serge Ibaka were going down. I got 4 games in 6 nights here with a lot of travel. Oh, same arena last night and tonight. But it's...
Overall,
they got a lot of travel. They were going to have to, or he was going to have to expand his bench usage anyway. Now it's just absolutely required.
Like, there's obviously a common theme where you, Ziggy, hate when coaches are very cut and dry with their comments in the media. But here's the thing. If you just say what it is, you know what can happen? Your words can be misconstrued. If you are a coach who likes to go in front of the cameras and use nuance and maybe say things with a smile and a wink, that leaves it up to the media to run with it and be like, you know what he probably meant? You know who I think he was talking about? You know what he was alluding to? And really just run wild with the comments. If you're as pointed as Nick Nurse has been this season, saying, yeah, Pascal Siakam, he needs to be better. He's got to get his hand out of the mix. He's not playing smart. How are you supposed to construe that except for exactly what he said? And then you look at the tape and you watch the games and you look at the numbers, you're like, yeah, he hasn't been particularly smart in the way that he's picking up his fouls. And if he says, yeah, there's really only 8 guys that I want to use, and really and truly I believe it to be like, yeah, like maybe like 7, what are you going to say? You're going to look at the minutes and be like, oh, the other guys on the bench are averaging 4 minutes a game. Yeah, he obviously doesn't trust them. Okay. And then that's it.
I think he was even surprised for some of the games those guys that came off the bench and the way they played. It was just like he looked stunned. Like, yeah, he's like, I don't really know. Yeah, this guy played great. Yeah, we played good defense, and yeah, we made our shots. He was almost like he didn't really have an idea of what he had.
Well, it's a tall order to go into Staples Center and play LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and their supporting cast, who's been really great, who were on a win streak of 7 games. They hadn't reached an 8-game win streak since the 2011 Lakers, and that was like a Matt Barnes, a Kobe Bryant, a Bynum, maybe a Lamar Odom as well back in the day. So it's been a minute since the Lakers have reached the pinnacle of hoops, and we still talk about them like they're a Mecca team, which they are compared to the Clippers, but this is the first time they've really done anything that's you're kind of like, okay, are they for real? But then the Raptors show that, listen, you can kill these guys in transition. Their transition defense is really, really terrible. LeBron James, he kind of struggled to score a little bit. He had 13 points. He had a triple-double. I believe it's his 3rd in 4 games, so that's really, really great. But is it efficient? Is it what you need? And then finally, you want to talk about injuries? Anthony Davis literally said out loud, yeah, there's not really a play that I don't feel my shoulder injury. There's not really a moment where I'm out there and something's not kind of tweaking or hurting. What are the Lakers doing? This guy needs to be really taken care of. If he's feeling it every single play, and listen, I am not someone who's like, oh, if you're bleeding, do you want to come off and sit on the bench? No, like if it's broken, then yeah, let's go. But there's a difference between an injury and being hurt is what I'm saying. But if there's something that's chronically wrong with Anthony Davis, you need to take care of him. And I know everyone hates load management, but when are you going to need him the most? In the postseason or during a 7-game win streak in the regular season?
Well, and the shoulder is as bad a joint as there is.
It's pretty imperative in basketball.
Lots of muscles, lots of tendons in there. It can
then
get
it goes neck, really back, complicated. Chest.
No, shoulder is the worst. I've had the 7 surgeries, and out of everything to deal with, the shoulder is the worst. I'm not saying basketball, obviously, is your arms over your head a lot more, but I can't imagine going through that every day. It's hard.
Kawhi said Winnipeg the other day, and we all freaked out. Huh? You like that?
Why do you think Winnipeg? Like, out of all the places, why?
No, but somebody was asking him about, you know, looking back on last year, now being in L.A., and said, well, there's so many Canadians who either live down here, it surprises me how many live down here or visit down here, and they come from Toronto and Winnipeg, and that just sets social media off.
Yeah.
We still love him.
Of course.
We're never letting him go.
No.
We have a
Don't
great
leave
appreciation.
Don't leave me, because I'll find you.
Yeah.
We're all like stage 5 clingers.
We're like
all of us
hanging out in the car with the tinted windows at the end of his driveway, parked roadside with the binoculars.
Oh, just, we're all just, a crazy we're, ex. We're all a crazy ex. It's like, I know you say you're happy now, but okay. It was different between us.
The helicopters during when he was.
That wasn't the difference, though.
But that.
No, he was gone from before.
I just mean it's ridiculous. Like,
oh, the attention.
On.
I know.
I wasn't in Toronto for that whole deal, thank God. But it was. That was bad watching that from afar.
The whole
thing
was widely embarrassing. I was just the most embarrassing thing to me personally was the apology from Bless His Heart, Nav Bhatia, and Mayor Tory when they stood up in front of the media. And they're like, please, just leave him alone. Stop it. We love him. He did so much for us. We got to stop the craziness.
It's embarrassing.
It was. I was in there. I'm just like, oh, no. Shh.
Like people were camped out on the street in Yorkville because they think he was in a building.
Well, the only reason that makes you mad is because you couldn't get to your regular watering holes in Yorkville. You're like, what are these peasants? Yeah. Excuse me and my leather boots. I need to step over you. Yeah, well, I don't know. Whatever fancy things Mike wears.
Definitely not leather boots, but...
Oh, right. Oh, vegan. Yeah, vegan, my bad.
Faux leather boots, thank you.
Pleather, yeah,
okay,
a little.
Okay, first of all, I will say, in terms of PR and marketing, and this is the biggest sidebar ever, but nothing underwent a bigger image adjustment than pleather. Because do you remember it was like people wear this to Electric Circus or they're really gothic and they used to shop at Le Chateau before they sold the same bridesmaid's dress in every single color for the last
but
10 years?
But pleather is really shiny too, isn't it?
It can be.
Yeah.
But now they re-rented it vegan leather and everyone's like, oh, excuse me, sashaying down the road in their vegan leather when before pleather was like the herpes of fabric. Like, you don't want it. You can't get rid of it.
There is a difference between good and bad faux or vegan leather. If you get the cheap stuff, it sweats more. So if you have the shoes,
oh
yeah, it sweats. If you get something a little bit more expensive, it does breathe.
I mean, like, I think that's the most obvious thing you've ever said. It's like, sometimes when you buy things, there's high quality and low quality.
Yeah.
No, Sherlock.
Vegan leather, there's no difference.
What is it, 7th or 8th Avenue in New York City where they hawk their wares on the side of the road there?
You can find Mike selling his shoes. Yeah, this is top quality stuff, man, I'm telling you.
It's my vegan pleather. The other brand overhaul, which is really good, is the company, which shan't be named, but the one that went from beef jerky to protein snacks. Like, that's a glow up, eh? Like, you go from here's some beef jerky to here's some protein, because everybody's on a protein kick.
Hashtag keto.
Right? See that all around the Rogers Center.
Yeah, I beef jerky. I don't know what to follow that one up with.
We now go to Ziggy for some
tofu guy, right?
For some
hashtag analysis.
Analysis. Yeah. Okay. Back to you, Bob. Ross Tucker. Speaking of this is tofu guy, right? He'll be along at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. You tell me what's going on in the NFL. Man, the AFC is just a complete puzzle right now, and the New Orleans Saints, they get thumped at home by the Atlanta Falcons. Green Bay gets it done against Carolina. We'll cover all of that. We'll get Hugh Burrell into studio and we'll do the six pack. That's next.
OddsShark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Well, OddsShark.net has those too. And it's free. Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make sharp game day picks, whether you want to get in on the football action, tonight's hockey game, or anything in between. Go to oddshark.net. This is not a gambling site.
Now let's crack open the six-pack. The top stories we're talking about this morning. One.
What's that thing that Mike Babcock likes to say? Start on time? Well, one of these games, the Leafs are actually going to do that.
4-on-3, here's Kane. The Brickett tucks it across, open side, they score! Jonathan Toews off a great passing play. The Hawks cash in a 4-against-3, and now they lead 4-1.
Yeah, 4-1 Blackhawks after one period. They win it 5-4. Willie Nylander had 2 goals for the Leafs. Auston Matthews, 4 assists in the loss, and says that... they'd better smarten up.
Oh, it's really frustrating. I think everybody in the locker room is frustrated. And I think it's just the mindset coming in. That first period, we got to be ready to play. It's got to come within each other, within the guys that lead this group, wear letters. And we got to be ready to go from the puck drop. Because, tonight we left Hutch out to dry in that first period. There's really nothing they can do on any of those goals. But that's really on us.
Leafs are now 0-4-1 in back-to-backs this season. Why can't they start on time?
It's one of those things where it has to stop coming from the coach. It's the guys, they're tiptoeing into these back-to-backs. Let's see what the other team's going to do. You can't do that at all, especially on a back-to-back, especially on the road. And Hutchinson, he's not to blame for this. You're looking at the record. You're saying the team could have been... you know, so much better this year if they would just, you know, go 500 on these back-to-backs. This isn't Hutchinson's fault. Is he Anderson and Nett? No. Is he the best backup in the league? No. But he doesn't deserve all the blame for these back-to-back losses.
I have no idea why they don't, quote, start on time. And I just continue to be struck by the juxtaposition between this Leafs team and this Raptors team. The latter is scrappy. This Leafs team, it's just too many periods of time during a game where they look somewhat disinterested.
They're saying the right things after the game, but saying and doing are different.
Yep. Absolutely. Just ask my exes.
Oh, let's not drag them into this, okay?
Please do.
Two.
It's only a 3-hour show. The Leafs sending out a news release.
That's a compliment. You meant it as a dig, but it's actually kind of a compliment. So, okay.
I have a lot of exes, okay?
Okay.
All my exes live in Texas. Anyway, the Leafs sending out a news release during the game that Mitch Marner will be out at least a month with that ankle injury he suffered Saturday against the Flyers. Jason Spezza slotted in last night after being a healthy scratch in the previous three games. Captain John Tavares says Marner's injury, yeah, it sucks, but this could be an opportunity for somebody.
We've had injuries already this year. It's part of the game, and there's no question. Mitch is a huge part of our team, huge part of our success. So opportunity for guys to step up, and, you know, we're not expecting anyone to be Mitch. But as a group, I think we got a lot of depth, a lot of talent to do the job we need to do.
Who steps up in Marner's absence?
Go right down the list. You want, McCabe's been great this year. You want a little bit more of him. His finish hasn't been what we all thought by the way that he plays. He plays such a good game. You expect him to score more. Moore looked tired last night. Probably the first time this season where I'd expect a little bit more out of him. I know he does a lot of the good things. He's great in the forecheck. He's physical, but he kind of looked tired. Spezza and Kerfoot saw Kerfoot get moved up to the Tavares line. He didn't have his best last night, but he still does a lot of good things in the offensive zone. He hangs on to pucks. He looks for late guys. He's good at getting the puck back to the point. Gochi, Shore, Timoshov, a lot of just very average last night. These guys are getting a chance.
Kapanen's
got to step up.
More
Kapanen.
Well, go ahead.
Well, he's a guy who can play in almost all situations, right? I mean, he can even be an offensive threat on the PK. We've seen that in the past. I don't know if he's a top-line guy. I mean, it seems like he struggles when he moves up in the lineup. But if he can be a contributor on either the second or the third line, score some goals while Mitch is down, obviously it'd be a huge help.
I wonder if it's going to give Tyson Barrie an opportunity to get on PP1 in some instances. Maybe they finagle the lines a little bit more so they can kind of open the gates on him. We know he's been a bit of a slow starter in terms of offensive output or production. But really and truly, it's going to just need to be Austin Matthews, William Nylander, and Johnsson, who had a great night last night. But if they're not the driving force behind this team, if they're not up there in the conversations when you talk about Boston's big line, when you talk about Colorado's big line, then it's not really going to matter.
Yeah, again, Matthews 4 assists, William Nylander 2 goals in a loss.
3.
Kyle Lowry's out at least 2 weeks with a fractured thumb. Serge Ibaka returned home from the road trip to get treatment on that sprained ankle. So it was a pretty gutsy effort by the Raptors last night. They went into L.A. and beat the Lakers 113-104, their 10th straight win over the Lakers. Pascal Siakam, a team-high 24. Fred VanVleet, 23. Canadian Chris Boucher matched a career high with 15. Even LeBron James was impressed with the Raptors' effort.
Yeah, but they still got championship players on it. No matter, they were shorthanded, but they still got guys as championship DNA players. You know, so we didn't take that lightly. And the guys that came in, gave them a good boost.
Scott, you just alluded to it in the last segment where we talked about players stepping up. The Leafs haven't been able to do that. Raptors sure did last night.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's Boucher or Hollis Jefferson, Thomas, like it doesn't matter. You've got to figure out a way here over the next couple of weeks at least without Kyle, and then Serge will be a little bit longer than that. You hope you stay healthy with everybody else in the meantime. You got to figure out ways to piece it together. But we knew, didn't know that Lowry and Ibaka were going to go down, but we knew that Nick Nurse was going to have to rely more on his bench heading into this week with 4 games and 6 nights on a travel-heavy road trip.
And I know it's been something that's been widely discussed, and I've pushed this agenda a ton on this show, but Pascal Siakam, It's one thing to go into the offseason and say, yeah, I want to add a counter to my signature crossover. I want to add a spin move. I want to add some distance on my shot. It's a complete other thing to be able to actually implement it immediately. And I can't speak enough about his improvement this year, specifically shooting the three-point shot above the break. Yet again, he's done something he said he was going to do, and he's made it efficient.
He's been great so far.
Four.
Raptors play Kawhi and the Clippers tonight. Over the weekend, Kawhi was saying when he heard the news he was traded to Toronto, he actually took it as a positive.
I was just telling someone the other day, it's shocking to me how many Canadians do live here in America or just visiting, you know, just walking around, people saying I'm from Toronto or you from, Winnipeg or these different cities in Canada. And, you'll never know unless you, go play out there, I guess, and then they recognize your talent for playing with the Raptors.
And aside from expressing his love for Canadians, he also said he took the trade as a positive, that he was actually, despite what people were thinking, he was actually okay with it because he'd heard good things. So Kawhi and the Clippers versus the Raptors tonight, who you got? Paul George will not play tonight. It was expected he'd make his season debut.
I mean, I have the Clippers. They're so good. And Kawhi somehow got better. He turned into a point guard as well. But it's not even him. It's players like Lou Will who are in the mix, too. They are just a team full of assassins. And I believe the Raptors will take this one really personal because they know the rhetoric surrounding their team that they're not going to do anything since Kawhi left them. So I think this means a lot to these guys. But they're so good. We saw it firsthand.
Now, Kawhi's a pretty stoic kind of guy. We know that. But do you think that, there's a little something extra in it tonight for him against the Raptors?
Well, he said Winnipeg the other day, Hugh.
I did hear him say that.
Winnipeg. Is it
Thanks,
something?
Matt Dedlin.
Kawhi drains it
from Winnipeg. Yeah.
From Brandon.
Which is really a long shot, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, like probably
further
from
than half court.
Yeah, I would say probably more down toward your end of the year.
But he's geeked up for tonight.
Look, is it really?
I don't know.
You get a sense?
I don't know.
Do you get a sense that Kawhi Leonard would treat tonight like any other game? I mean, he's got pals on the team, but it's not like it was an ugly divorce. It's not like the goal wasn't achieved in Toronto. This guy, I think, just quietly goes about his business each and every night. It may mean more to him, but if it does, we'll never know it.
It will be more important when they come to Toronto.
Yeah.
That will be special for him, I believe.
He'll get his ring.
I love my revenge games, but it's the player on the old team. I feel like it's the team against the player in this situation. You heard Fred talk, I don't know if it was before the game yesterday. It was, hey, what do you think about, coming back against Kawhi? And I think a lot of players, I don't want to say they're upset, but there's definitely a little bit of tension there.
Five.
That game tonight, by the way, 10:30, Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. TFC came up a little short in its bid for a second MLS Cup title yesterday, losing 3-1 in Seattle. Josie Altidore scored the lone Toronto goal after coming in as a substitute in the second half. Lots of questions surrounding the future of captain Michael Bradley. His contract runs out at the end of the year, and there's a report out there suggesting he would have been extended for a year at his current $6.5 million if TFC had won the title, so we might be looking at a pretty different Toronto FC team next season.
Well, we saw a different team this year, right? Yeah. I mean, Giovinco was gone, Victor Vasquez was out of the picture, and this season could have gone one of two ways with changes of that significance.
Yeah, to do what they did in the absence of those guys.
Because last year was a big-time letdown coming off the MLS Cup championship. I think there was some internal discord even at times. They pieced it back together, had a terrific run this season. I'll tell you this, too. Like, Michael Bradley loves this city.
Yeah.
Loves the city. So does Altidore.
Let me throw this out there. His dad coaches LAFC.
Right.
No one wants to play for your dad. Love you, Bernie, but no one wants to play for your dad. The one thing that I did stand out when we were talking to Josh Cloak on Friday is that this team is always going to be willing to spend money. They're not interested in being a flash in the pan. They want to be a legacy team. They don't want to be a juggernaut for certain excerpts of time. So even if it's not Michael Bradley, that $6.5 million is going to get spent somewhere, and they're going to try and bring in another big name. This year was Pozuelo.
Seattle, one of the Seattle Sounders owners, Drew Carey, was actually asked about that over the weekend. He said, yeah, he uses the Toronto spending model as their model, too, because Seattle has turned itself into a juggernaut as well.
Six.
Vikings get the W in Big D.
From just outside the one. Toss right to Dalvin. Turns it up to the end zone. Touchdown! Dalvin Cook struts into the end zone. And the Minnesota Vikings have taken a 26-21 lead.
97 yards rushing for the NFL's rushing leader. 86 more yards receiving for Dalvin Cook. Vikings beat the Cowboys 28-24. They're 7-3. Cowboys are 5-4. Tonight, Monday nighter, 7-2 Seattle. I don't know, versus some team. Oh, yeah, San Francisco.
That what it says?
The unbeaten San Francisco 49ers, 8-0 in the Monday night. This is the biggest test of the season for your team.
Huge test. I mean, Russell Wilson would be the MVP if it'll be a toss-up between him and Lamar Jackson right now. But Seattle is not a 7-2 team at all without Russell Wilson. From the 49ers' perspective, sounds like they're going to get their two tackles back. George Kittle might not play. But with New Orleans losing yesterday, if the 49ers win tonight, they have a two-loss lead on all of their NFC opponents. At least a two-loss lead on all of their NFC opponents. And that would be huge for them as they play for not just the first round bye, but for home field advantage through the NFC playoffs.
By the way, the Bills lost yesterday in Cleveland. The Bills fall to 6-3. All the scores on the website, sportsnet.ca.
We just have one question because we're in a studio right now and we can't see out the window. Is it snowing yet? We've got details on bus cancellations, although looks as though the kids are still expected in school. We'll get you those details in a moment.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, so apparently it snows heavily as early as November 11th. This isn't going to be a thing now, is it, this year? When it would start to snow this early when I lived in Ottawa, it would last till March.
Is this early?
Oh, my God,
mid-November?
Yes.
This is early.
In a snowy town?
There have been years where, including maybe last year, where snow doesn't fall till after Christmas. Or snow that falls doesn't stay on the ground till after Christmas.
Accumulates?
That's a very adult word.
Thank you so much. I used to be a weather anchor, so come at me with your weather takes, please.
Meteorologist Ashley Docking?
Weather anchor.
Weather specialist.
Yeah, no, I don't think they can call me weather specialist because you have to have like schooling and a certificate for that also. But I killed the green screen, let me tell you.
So we have from our friends at 680 News, and if you're looking for the most up-to-date information on school bus cancellations, school cancellations, whatever is about to go down today with this weather, head on up the dial to 680 News. In Halton region, shout out Oakville, buses canceled in all zones today for public and Catholic board schools. However, the schools remain open. And I'm seeing here that around the horseshoe, they're going to get walloped a little bit here, kind of Hamilton and then over to Niagara. 15 to 25 centimeters could fall in Niagara region. All buses are canceled today for the District School Board of Niagara and the Niagara Catholic District School Board, although schools are open.
I used to miss so many days playing hockey in minor hockey that if it was a snow day and the buses were canceled, it was a walk to school. And it wasn't around the corner. It was a couple K.
You're not one of these
uphill both ways.
Bare feet.
Oh, boy, you.
No, but when it's coming down and you're 13, 14, and you got to walk to school, come on.
Listen, my guy, I got tricked into doing a 42-kilometer hike into the interior BC and go camping in the winter. So I don't want to hear your when I was 13 stories.
How do you get tricked into doing that?
I thought we were going for like a spa weekend and like do a couple nice light 5 to 10 kilometer hikes during the day and then go and like an Epsom salts bath after. And then it turned into like, make sure you bring a knife with at least a 6-inch blade so you can pierce a bear's heart. And I was like, what? Like I saw it in the text group. That was an actual message. I was like, I have questions.
Doesn't sound like a pedicure.
It wasn't.
No.
It wasn't.
Oh. Yeah. More stories from weather specialist Ashley Docking as the show goes on. Ross Tucker of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. What the heck is going on in the AFC? And what are defenders supposed to do? Do they even understand what roughing the passer is, what pass interference is anymore? We'll get into that. Ross is with us next.
Subscribe to the Lead Off Podcast with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead Off with Ashley.
I'm going to tell you a secret about everyone else's job. No one knows what they're doing.
But you seem like you do know what you're doing.
Yeah, I seem like it.
Ziggy.
I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
And Scotty Mack.
If anything's going to lead me to an early grave, it's doing this.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
My Raptors on a back-to-back, and we've got the action tonight in Los Angeles again. This time it's Kawhi and the Clippers. Our coverage starts at 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock Eastern time. Stay up late with us. Raps and Clippers on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So thank you for, and I mean this to both of you, for getting me through the first hour of this show without bringing up any NFL action, results, storylines from yesterday, because you will notice, stop it with that stupid grin, Ziggy, you will notice that the Oakland Raiders are now in prime position not only to potentially make the playoffs, but to win the AFC West. So well,
that's just getting a little bit greedy. If they actually win, is there a little cherry on top on this? Do I get to choose maybe your outfit for the week or?
Nope. You know what I might do? And I'm not going to go to some great expense, but I do have a full-length tracksuit. I might pull the Mark Davis one day at work with the haircut and the full tracksuit deal. The hoodie top, the track pants, all one color, the full Mark Davis. I might do that, but no, I'm not stepping out on a ledge any further. That haircut, I can assure you, will be enough.
When you hear the analysts talk about I believe it was the Thursday night game that they said was going to determine if they do get in the playoffs. And I mean, it's looking...
Well, I'm telling you right now, the Raiders visit Kansas City this coming weekend. If Oakland wins that game, I may as well just cut my hair.
You're just going to start...
I may as well just cut my hair, really, at that point. I mean, I won't, just in case they miss, but I may as well. Ross Tucker of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast and the founder and CEO of Go Big Recruiting, former offensive lineman in the NFL, is with us at 7 o'clock each and every Monday morning, and today is no different. Ross, it's always great to catch up. Let's begin with the AFC, just in general. How would you describe that conference right now? I mean, it is a complete and total pick'em, it seems, save for the Patriots and Ravens right across the board.
Yeah, well, I'm exactly with you, and I think we've talked about this before, but the last 6 years, the Super Bowl participants have only been 1 and 2 seeds. Makes sense, right? I mean, obviously they get a bye, then they only have to win 2 games, one of which is at home, maybe both are at home. I don't see it being any different this year. You know, if you look at the other teams right now that we anticipate, I still think the Texans probably win the AFC South. I think the Chiefs probably win the AFC West. But I don't think either one of them are good enough to win back-to-back games at Baltimore and at New England. I really think it's going to be the Ravens and the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. and it should be an awesome game, because especially if Lamar Jackson throws the ball as well as he did yesterday, Ravens are going to be almost unstoppable. In fact, I think if he throws it that well, they are unstoppable. But if you're talking about a broader view of teams even getting into the postseason, it really is interesting to see Pittsburgh, Oakland, and Indianapolis for different reasons. Indianapolis, that was a really, really bad loss yesterday. But still, I mean, they're on their third quarterback. The Raiders, I don't think anybody thought they'd be here, myself included, and the Steelers, after starting 0-3 and then watching Mason Rudolph play the first couple games, there is no way I thought the Steelers would be 5-4. So kudos to Mike Tomlin. Kudos to that coaching staff. So it will be interesting to see who gets in as the last couple wild cards. But to be honest with you, I'd be surprised if they even won a game. But look, it's still nice to get in the playoffs. You never know, I guess. But I don't think those teams are up to the challenge to going to Kansas City or Houston and winning a game.
Lamar Jackson, let's just start to dig in there, because I don't know if I've really seen anything unfold in real time, how he has and how he's kind of taken people by surprise. Not the fact that he's good, it's just the fact that how good he is, right? And yes, we've talked about Baltimore and them tailoring their offense around his skill set, but you still have to execute it, and his supreme athleticism has allowed him to do that. Have you ever seen anything like him before? I know the running comps are Michael Vick-esque to a certain extent, but you mentioned the throwing in there as well, so the accuracy is something that can't be overlooked.
Yeah, so he's still not a great thrower of the football consistently.
Yeah.
But he has his games. He has his games where he throws it really well. He did against the Dolphins. He did yesterday. And like when he's thrown it that well, you can pretty much just forget it. It's a wrap. But then there's other games where he misses some throws that you really can't miss. Mm-hmm. But he's able to make up for it. I do think the comparison is probably Michael Vick, because of his ability to make some of the deep throws, because of how fast and athletic he is. I mean, that spin move was amazing. Mm-hmm. I think the difference is Lamar Jackson is more focused on football than Michael Vick was, and they're also doing a better job of tailoring the offense to him, like you said. I mean, in the first half, I saw him run the option like 4 or 5 times. I mean, since when do NFL teams ever run the option? And by the way, like I was taught this in high school, if a quarterback's going to run the option, you got to kill the quarterback. Like, I'm sorry, but that's the job. Like, because what you're doing is you're having the quarterback run down the line and then pitch the ball.
Yeah.
He's pitching off of someone. Whoever he's pitching off of needs to go hit Lamar Jackson as hard as they possibly can. Patriots tried it. It didn't work. But I don't think you can discount, Ashley, just how good of a job Greg Roman is doing with the offense. But to your point, you know, Greg Roman did a nice job, the Ravens offensive coordinator, but that wasn't him that hit the spin move on that 45-yard touchdown run either. That was unbelievable.
It probably would have been a little bit slower.
With Ross Tucker. Ross, what's it like as a former offensive lineman? What's it like to block for a more traditional quarterback? I think I'm obviously asking about pass blocking here, dropping back. What's it like to block for a traditional, more traditional quarterback versus somebody who, whether it's the read option, but can also often get out of the pocket, scramble, extend plays, you know, give you that extra 4, 5, 6 seconds before something happens downfield?
You know, it's interesting. While you were talking, I was just thinking about all the quarterbacks I had. I don't know that I never really had a quarterback. Certainly didn't have a guy like Lamar Jackson or anybody like that. There were some guys that could move around a little bit. It teaches you to sustain your blocks longer, and you have to be especially careful with your hands, because when they break contain, you got to let go, because you're taught to grab basically the jersey numbers, you know, in the shoulder pads, the breastplate of the shoulder pad. You want to grab that. And that's not a hold. If you're within the framework of the body, it's not a hold, unless you're totally restricting the defender's movement, which the officials can see when the quarterback breaks the pocket. I would tell you that every offensive lineman would still rather have like a Peyton Manning, Tom Brady type of quarterback, because if your guy beats you and the quarterback runs around, makes that guy miss and makes a great play, that's good for the team. But your offensive line coach still gives you a minus on the play and still cusses you out and says that that was pathetic. Whereas if you have like Brady or Manning, even if the guy beats you, they throw the ball so quick that it's like, you got to be doing better than that, Tuck. But the ball was out. Like you get credit when the quarterback gets through the ball really quickly. You don't get credit when Lamar Jackson or Russell Wilson or Kyler Murray, whoever, does one of these amazing Houdini acts.
Now, speaking about other quarterbacks in the league, Prescott was having one of his best games of the season. When you're watching the end of that game and you know that Dak's throwing the ball the way he was all game, does it bother you as a player when you're like, why worry about the clock? Because isn't that the reason they really changed their game plan?
Correct. I think that they felt very confident that they were going to be able to get a first down. So what I believe they were trying to do was sort of serve two masters, which is get the first down, score the touchdown, but also take some time off the clock so that Kirk Cousins and the Vikings couldn't go down and get a game-tying field goal. And so I guess I understand that, and I understand running it once. I don't think I would have run it twice. I think the second one, and really you could have thrown it on second and run on third, because you can still throw it and have, you know, he was having so much success on the throws, those slants. So you're still in the middle of the field there. You know, you're still running the clock there, even if you throw it and complete it. Or Dak could even scramble potentially and run for the first down. And I didn't like the fourth down play either. I mean, he's having so much success throwing to the receivers, so much success on, you know, those in-breaking slants and stuff. The line was giving him so much time to throw an out-breaking route to Zeke. Didn't love it. So I'd be a little frustrated just because the offensive line did a terrific job in pass protection, and yet it didn't really matter. I mean, the real issue is when Dak Prescott plays one of the best games of his life, you got to win that game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, quarterbacks aren't always going to play that great. You know, sometimes they're just off. They're not as accurate as they normally are. You got to win. When your quarterback is on fire, you have to win that game. Feels like that's a loss that's going to come back to haunt the Cowboys.
Do you think that this season is going to be considered a disappointment for Ezekiel Elliott? If you look at his game log, and I guess you can kind of count out week one just because of the holdout, maybe there was a load management situation, 53 yards. But since then, there's been 3 weeks where he's failed to get 65 yards on the ground or more. They've all been losses for the Cowboys. They've come against the Saints, the Packers, and then just the Vikings now. And then additionally, the receiving yards haven't necessarily been that spectacular either as a pass catching back. So based on the holdout, the contract, and the performance, is there a chance that this season is going to be disappointing for Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would tell you, though, Ashley, you know, I was on the sideline on Sunday night last Monday night, I should say, mm-hmm. and he still had 139 yards.
He did, yeah.
Against the Giants, and he was – can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So, I mean, I don't know. Up until last night, he had three straight games over 100 yards rushing. So, there's a chance, but it seemed like the Vikings sold out to stop the run, and the Cowboys took advantage of it through the air. I don't see any negative, really, from Zeke. I think that the Vikings did a nice job taking away what they thought was what made the Cowboys go. And I'm not even sure they were right. I mean, the Cowboys still moved the ball seemingly up and down the field because of Dak. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about Zeke.
With Ross Tucker of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, this is Leadoff on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Did you see the Gerald McCoy roughing the passer call, Carolina at Green Bay, Ross? And if so, what did you make of it? It got a lot of traction on social media. I actually think I've seen worse calls than that, but that one seemed to be being described as the worst of all of these roughing the passer calls we've ever seen.
You know, I'm so glad you said that because I actually didn't get a chance. I just, my family had just gotten home. So I had just gone and I saw on Twitter everybody talking about it. I think I did see it one clip. It's just the way it is. And it's disappointing, but they are going to err on the side of caution when it comes to any quarterback hit. And I'm convinced, by the way, especially when it's like a star quarterback, those guys are going to get even more protected because I think the officials, they know the deal. Like they know that they need to be careful with those guys. So I did not think it should be called, but I'm not shocked that it was. I actually have more of an issue with so many of what I think are like ticky-tack holding calls and pass interference calls. Like, I get it. Quarterbacks trying to protect them. We've already had 16 teams use multiple quarterbacks. I got it. So they're going to err on the side of caution there. But I just feel like with offensive and defensive holding, really even offensive and defensive pass interference, I'd rather let them see them play. It's not a safety thing. And nobody's, like, clamoring for more penalties. Nobody wants to see more flags. That's a bigger issue in my mind.
Yeah, it's funny because you hear about holding, and one of the arguments for the increased amount of calls is that, well, these superstars, they deal with so much contact, you got to give them a fair shake. And from where I'm sitting, and it might be an antiquated way of thinking, but listen, if you're good, you're going to get more attention. And as someone who's good, you're going to find a way around it. And that's the way it is. That's the way it's been. And that's the way it's probably always going to be.
Correct. And I prefer letting them play. What I don't like is it seems like, and this is the case Thursday night, seems like it's the case in a lot of games. You're almost surprised after a snap at this point when there's not a flag.
Yeah.
It's bad. I mean, it is a bad, that's arguably the worst thing the NFL has going right now. I mean, even all these touchdowns, it's like, okay, is there a flag though? Like you're like looking for a flag.
Yep.
It's just too much.
You almost see people not celebrating.
It's too many. Yeah, it's too many stoppages. It's too many seeing the officials. It's just not good.
Yeah, did both feet come down? Was his elbow down or his hip down inbounds? We've got to check the 32 angles. They've got to go under the hood. All of that stuff. That's why some of these 1 o'clock games don't end until like 4:45. It's crazy. This Falcons-Saints game, so if you go off the betting line, it was a 30.5-point swing. New Orleans was a 13.5-point favorite at home. They lose by 17 to the 1-7 Falcons. I mean, is it just one of those days? Some bad penalties, some poor execution. Drew Brees wasn't at the top of his game. You just chalk it up to that or concern here for the Saints?
I think it's just one of those days for the Saints. I think the bigger story is the Falcons coming off the bye, coming out and playing that well. I couldn't believe it. I wouldn't say I was totally shocked. I do a NFL betting podcast called the Even Money Podcast, and I took the Falcons with the points, but that doesn't mean I thought they'd win by 17, and it certainly doesn't mean I thought they'd sack Drew Brees six times and beat the crap out of him all game. That was what was surprising, because the Saints have arguably the best offensive line in the league. The Falcons haven't been able to get any pressure all year. That's the part that really was stunning to me. And look, Dan Quinn of the Falcons said, it's a second season. It's another chance for us. And, man, if they could use that as a springboard to keep playing well, maybe Dan Quinn actually will keep his job after the season, which seems crazy.
So you just answered my question. Can Dan Quinn save himself this season? Is that at all possible?
Yeah. I mean, if they go like 7-1 down the stretch, that's probably pretty hard to fire a guy at that point, right? Because then you start to feel like, man, we might be able to have even more success next year. We can carry this forward. We can keep this rolling. I mean, they're able to convince themselves of that. That's for sure.
What's it like playing for a coach who everyone knows is on the chopping block? Were you on the 2002? Dallas Cowboys, the last year that Dave Campo was there before he got let go?
My first three, Yeah, my first 3 years, Ashley, my coach got fired. 2001, Marty Schottenheimer with the Redskins. 2002, Dave Campo with the Cowboys. 2003, Greg Williams with the Buffalo Bills. So forget, like, Latrell Sprewell. Like, I'm the original coach killer. Right? Like, I'm the real coach killer. But, no, it's funny because I said that sometime to my agent. My agent's like, stop saying that. Like coaches don't want to hear that. Don't tell anybody that, which is kind of funny. But, no, you know, with Marty Schottenheimer, I was a rookie. I didn't really know any different. But sure. With Dave Campo, we had two games left, and there was a report that Jerry Jones had met with Bill Parcells at, like, the Teterboro Airport in Jersey. So it was awful. It was awful. That's a little bit different because you know he's done.
Right.
You know, with Dan Quinn, like, you're still fighting for him. With Dave Campo, we knew he was done. So, like, you walk around, and all of the coaches have these awful looks on their face, and, like, nobody even looks each other in the eye. Nobody, it's a really, 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 you know, look, nobody's going to feel bad for you. You're a professional football player getting a lot of money to play football, but it's a really bad environment. Like, it's not a fun environment at all.
Ross, we're literally out of time, so I can only ask you for a pick 'em tonight. Who do you have, San Francisco or Seattle?
Niners, of course. Niners are the best team in football.
Thank you.
Stop pandering. This is ridiculous.
Sir, on that note,
Coach Killa on the line.
We'll let you go, and we will talk next week. Thanks, Ross.
See you guys.
See Bye.
You.
Ross Tucker of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, the founder and CEO of Go Big Recruiting. Alvin Williams a little later on in the program. James Sharman to recap yesterday's MLS Cup Final. Toronto FC falls 3-1 to Seattle. Remember, we've got Raptors Clippers tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with our coverage starting at 10 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll reset the Maple Leafs, one out of a possible 4 points on the weekend, and they lose Mitch Marner. That's next.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Reminder, you can always head up the dial to 680 News for the latest on bus school cancellations as we, on November the 11th, get ready for our first snowstorm of the season. Halton Region buses canceled for both public and Catholic school boards. Schools are open. Same deal in Niagara region. And apparently from Hamilton to Niagara, they're going to get like 15 to 25 centimeters of snow. I don't even have my winters on yet. Oh,
your
well,
what?
My winter tires.
Oh, I don't do those.
No.
All seasons, let it ride.
Just roll the dice.
Well, as long as the tread is acceptable and up to standard, then yeah, I just, you know, hope for the best.
I was never a winter tires guy. And then when I moved to Ottawa and lived there for 10 years, like, it's non-negotiable.
It's
like,
different. The Kingston to Ottawa region, it's different. It's a total different climate. It's colder. They get tons more snow.
Yeah.
You tell people that and they just like,
it's only 4 hours that way. How bad can it be?
It's north.
It's absolutely north. It is the last time I looked at a map.
But if you ask people, they're like, oh, Kingston, Ottawa, it's just east of the city. It's like,
northeast.
Well, not really.
Yeah.
It's north.
According to my calculations.
The other thing, unlike Toronto, Ottawa doesn't have like this massive body of water sitting beside it that helps moderate the temperature.
You know what's
I mean, it's north. I mean, by the way, you're wearing that one for a long time. That's north.
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
And then if you go around the bottom of Lake, I lived in Rochester for a year.
I'm sorry.
On the bottom of Lake Ontario.
Oh, okay?
But it's even worse than Ottawa. And that's south.
Well, it is.
Oh,
but
my God.
Yeah. Doubling down on the bad geography guy. No, but yeah, because
right,
of the lake effect and all that stuff.
Yeah. SpongeBob meme. I'm ahead out.
By the way, before we get into the Leafs, you're having a good day. You don't have your phone.
despite sitting in the room with you two for the last
excuse me,
the last hour and a half, things have been going really well today. I forgot my phone at home. And I understand that some people have children, so you want to have your phone with you just in case there's an emergency situation that crops up, or you're largely dependent on it for work, emails, and things like that. But if you can go one day a week just leaving your phone at home to notice the difference, I think it's important. And not necessarily because of the production that you'll get that day. It's the subsequent days when you are on your phone so much, it is more of a reminder because you had the full, what word am I looking for? Cleansing of the technology in and around your hands for the full day. So we'll see what happens
when I get home. I had a weekend this summer. My cell went down, bring it into Apple, and then, yeah, what do you do? 3 days without a phone. Could you make it? Because a lot of people were like, 3 days without a phone. Could you make it?
Is that when you do? Is that when you dropped it in the toilet?
No, that was the first day before the show started. It was this summer. My phone went down and I was going to get a new one. I said, you know what? Let's just see if I can do it without. The first day was rough and it just kept getting worse. Actually, it didn't get better.
I think if I'm like in my routine in the city, going to work, expecting to communicate with the people I know, it would drive me nuts. If I was camping for a weekend or up at a cottage. I think I could survive.
But you don't realize how much you do on it. It's everything. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, like, how do you make calls? I'm like, calling people was the least of my worries because there's other ways to message people. You're not worried about people leaving you voicemails. I know we're talking about that. It was more things of like traffic, GPS, trying to figure out where I was going. Mm-hmm. A lot of things. Looking up places when you're on the road. So you don't realize how much you use the technology when you're moving around the city. It's not just so much at home. But, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I can't message my friends or I can't call people. I was like, that's.
So it wasn't social media that was your problem. It was just the resources that internet allows you to have.
Yes. And it's everything.
Like traffic.
Traffic's the big one,
GPS,
right?
GPS, Waze. Yeah.
Because I was living in Markham at the time. And it was when you go in the city, usually you pull up whatever app you use to figure out the way you're going to get down there. And
you
then
literally
a lot of times,
sound like you're from Ohio. So when I travel down to the big city from Markham, dude, it's like 25 minutes north, as a matter of fact.
North!
Like, it's not that serious.
He the north.
But yeah, it's far. Markham is not. If you discuss people from Markham trying to get in the city, it's like.
It's the old traffic thing.
At 24 years old, I moved out of the city out to Scarborough because I needed a little bit of I needed the buffer zone to.
And now, in middle-aged, you've...
I can move back down because I'm not worried about going out at night.
So we're juxtaposing the performance of the two winner teams because both are somewhat depleted here now. The Leafs have been going through some injury-related stuff this season. John Tavares missed more than a couple weeks with a finger. Mitch Marner in an unfortunate situation off the period-opening face-off, second period against Philadelphia on Saturday night, has his right leg crumpled underneath him. He's got a high ankle sprain. He's down for at least a month, and it's going to be more than that because apparently the four-week mark is when he's going to be evaluated. And these high ankle sprains are trouble.
And what's worse is that you come back after the 4 weeks when it's all healed and feels great, and then all of a sudden is when the problem is when you re-injure it. Apparently that's the issue. It's one thing if it happens, you're out for the 4 or 5 weeks. If you can get it back to 100% and you're not going to have any more issues, great, but a lot of times guys come back early because they don't realize how bad it is in certain situations. When you're out on the ice and you're in a game, nothing will really, you can go through practices and go through off-ice stuff, but nothing will be the same as getting in a game.
So it's going to be a grind for him for a little bit. And the Leafs get one of a possible 4 points.
Yeah.
And let's not dispute this. The two teams they played this weekend are inferior to them. The Philadelphia Flyers are an inferior team to the Toronto Maple Leafs on paper. The Chicago Blackhawks absolutely are an inferior team to the Toronto Maple Leafs on paper. One of a possible 4 points.
Well, I'm watching the Philly game Saturday, I was trying to wonder, is Philly that good or was Toronto just not playing the way I'm used to seeing them play? Because the Philly team...
What do you mean not used to seeing them play? They haven't been very good all year.
I know they haven't been great, but... not this team that I'm used to seeing. And is it part of the consistency issue? But it's just one of those things where if I see a team that's not as good and all of a sudden they're playing better than I expected. Then I'm wondering, well, are the Leafs just playing a really bad game today? Or did Philly, is Philly playing a great game today? Because they look decent for the most part. Philly didn't look terrible. And I know they're not as good as maybe they should be either. But that's one thing I kind of evaluate. I liked, from this weekend, I liked Nylander for the most part. And I don't want to say that just because he's scoring. And I know Nylander's army comes after me if I ever say he misses a pass or he should have scored on something, or if there's maybe speculation around a possible trade. But for the most part, he was engaged this weekend. And when he's engaged, he's a great player. And that's one of the things where if I ever do talk about moving a player, it could be anybody. So from last week, I know I was talking about if they're in cap trouble, you're going to have to move a big contract further down the line. And he just happens to be my sixth best player on this team. So I don't mean anything by it where he should be the one moved. In saying that, he played well this game. He played well, really well yesterday. But there's just certain things at the start of the game. And I know we talked about starts, and it's small things. It's the first power play where he gives the puck up at the blue line. I don't understand. You can see the frustration on the power play unit when they're coming off the ice. And it's those little plays. He's making a great play up the ice, puts the puck wide, drives the net. There's a rebound there, and he drives by. I know that was later in the game, but it's little small things. Hey, he can score, right? We know that. He can set up plays. He's the best analytical driver through entries. Like, I love all that, but those little small things are when I'm on a team with – when I'm on the bench – those are the things I want to see.
But here's the thing. Even if the top line is playing well, that's fine. But they're starting late. And we always talk about the fact that the Maple Leafs can't outscore their problems. And last night was a perfect example of that. Not being able to outscore your issues. You made it a game. You ended up scoring 4 goals after going down 3-0 early on. You gave up 4 goals in the first period all in all. And then you come back, but you just can't get there. And this is against a team in the Chicago Blackhawks who, in more recent history, have had trouble holding a lead. So you did set yourself up for this amazing comeback, but again, you can't outscore your problems. And yes, Robin Leonard, he gets 57 shots on net. He makes 53 saves. Were they high danger shots? Not really. Not according to the graphs and the charts and the heat maps that you see on the ice. So are the opportunities even really great ones? There is a lot going on with this Toronto Maple Leafs team. There's going to be a lot more asked of everyone now that Mitch Marner's out of the lineup for the next month. 13 games minimum Mitch Marner is going to miss. 9 of those on the road. So it's not about the next person to step up. It's not about one person to do a better job. This is going to take a collective team effort. And when Alexander Ovechkin comes in and talks about not playing for yourself, and when Drew Doughty comes in and talks about what it takes to win a Stanley Cup, this is the time that the Leafs are going to have to prove that they have those traits and that they're willing to play unselfish. Like, did you think that they played a good game yesterday?
I'm
so sick of the conversation of, well, they had a good second period and a good half of a third. Did they have a good game?
It's tough to start games when you're down 4-1 in the first. It doesn't matter how good of a second and third period. You're not going to come back from those. What, 1 out of 100?
No, but that's what I'm saying. So yeah, did they have a good game? No.
It's what the thing is, when you throw 57 shots at someone, that's usually a really good night. The only thing that hurt them is 10 minutes of the game.
The only thing, though, but that, how many times are we going to be like the caveat? They played good, but they did this, but eventually that's just a character trait and it's a flaw.
They look tired. A lot of guys look tired, and it took them a while to get their legs. That's going to happen on the road sometimes, but some guys just didn't seem to get them. The guys that they rely on for a lot of their forechecking and a lot of their physical play.
Hawks were on a back-to-back as well, and you juxtapose the Leafs' performance with the Raptors down 8 at halftime. They storm back on the strength of their bench, and they're depleted anyway without Lowry and Ibaka. They come back, and they beat the LA Lakers 113-104. We'll deal with that with Elvin Williams at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. James Sharman a little bit later. Toronto FC falls 3-1 in the MLS Cup Final to Seattle. We've got the wraps and clips tonight on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, our coverage starts at 10 o'clock. And we want to get you into a draw for Leafs tickets. We'll do that next. 416-870-0590. will play one of our favorite games, Clean Sweep. Get to calling.
Oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Oddshark.net has those too, and it's free. Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make your sharp game day picks. Whether you want to get in the football action, tonight's hockey game, or anything in between, go to oddshark.net. This is not a gambling site.
Leadoff presents Clean Sweep.
All right, this is for your shot at getting into a draw for tickets to see the Leafs in a future game down at Scotiabank Arena. And an opportunity for you to win tickets to the Hyundai James Naismith Classic presented by Citi on November the 16th. We're playing Clean Sweep, so four questions. The first caller will remain on the line for as long as the questions continue to be answered correctly. The caller who answers question number four right will win the prize. Let's start with Tom in Ajax. Tom, what's up?
Not too much, just waiting for the snow to fall.
Like us all.
Jeez, Tom, coming in like a ray of sunshine, man. All right, here's your first question. I wish you the best of luck, sir. What type of injury did Mitch Marner suffer this weekend?
The dreaded high ankle sprain.
Attaboy.
All right, what question number two. What type of injury did Kyle Lowry suffer this weekend?
Well, a slightly fractured thumb, apparently.
Yes.
Do you want to join my medical practice, Tom?
How does it pay?
Not well. You can be my resident, though. We'll talk about things after.
Right.
Okay, question number three. We're off the injury train. This famous kids show, which features a large bird, turns 50 today.
Sesame Street.
Yes. Yeah. That's so nice. A full clean sweep in effect almost.
All right, here we go.
Don't jinx me.
Oops.
Name two of the four teams left in the CFL playoffs.
The Edmonton Eskimos and the Saskatchewan Roughriders.
Yes.
Tom, wow, that was so impressive.
Awesome.
Hey, who's in the wheelhouse? What can I say?
There you go. Tom and Ajax, congratulations. You have won two tickets to the Hyundai James Naismith Classic presented by Citi on November the 16th. A one-day triple header will feature the University of Tennessee versus the University of Washington, the University at Buffalo versus Harvard, and St. Bonaventure versus Rutgers. And you're also into the draw for a pair of tickets to a future Leafs home game. Jam-packed 8 o'clock hour at 8:30. James Sharman, our old buddy, to recap Toronto FC's 3-1 loss to the Seattle Sounders in the MLS Cup. And up next, the Raptors, down 8 at the half, depleted due to injury. No Lowry, no Ibaka. They storm back, get it done, beat the Lakers by 9. Can Nick Nurse piece it together over the next few weeks without a couple of his big players? We'll ask Elvin Williams next.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack.
Why are we going live with this? This is great radio.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
No. We'll do it live.
On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Raptors and Clippers tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with our coverage starting at 10 o'clock. It's the first of two meetings with Kawhi and LA, the Clippers this year. The Raptors, of course, as you just heard Hugh say, beating the Lakers last night at Staples Center, coming back from 8 down at halftime to win by 9. Nick Nurse going to the bench a little bit more, which he was going to have to this week anyway, but after Lowry and Ibaka went down, he was going to be forced to. A good night for the Toronto Raptors, juxtaposed by a not-so-good night for the Maple Leafs, who fell 5-4 in Chicago to the Blackhawks. So here's what we have in terms of injuries This is a crazy weekend in Toronto sports. Friday night in New Orleans, Lowry goes down. Quote, it was an offensive rebound and I swiped down and it felt weird from the rip, end quote. So it's a tip of the thumb type fracture. He's gone for a couple of weeks, at least. Serge Ibaka is longer term because he's got a high ankle sprain, right leg, left Smoothie King Center in New Orleans in a walking boot. And on the Leafs side, Mitch Marner got tangled up off the second period opening draw against the Philadelphia Flyers. His leg cratered, buckled underneath him. He's got a high ankle sprain, will be reevaluated in a month. So a crazy, crazy weekend injury-wise for Toronto sports teams. But like we said, as the Leafs struggled, the Raptors picked up their play and got it done last night. To discuss that, we are pleased to be joined by Sportsnet's NBA analyst, Elvin Williams, a former Raptor, is on the line. Elvin, thanks for doing this bright and early in the morning as we expect our first bit of snow in Toronto this year. I bet you missed that. Although you're in Philly, so, I mean, you kind of get it there too.
It's not much different.
What impressed you the most in the second half of last night's Raptors game?
Just the way the team stuck together and kept fighting. You know, Lakers are one of those teams where you see the talent they have, you see all the projections, and it's easy to fold. But the one thing, you know, this Raptors team, over the years even, you know, it's just one of those things where they consistently fight. And then, you know, you have different people stepping up and having big games on a big stage. So I just think the collective effort, you know, of the team coming together, Kyle Lowry's out. You know, Pascal Siakam wasn't having the greatest game. But, you know, the team stuck together as a unit and collectively and pulled it out.
When you look at this group, one of the things that you hope that they're able to fall back on based on the way that they're constructed is their defense. And it was exceptionally impressive to watch them board up pretty quickly and then head down the floor in transition and really run the Lakers off the court in terms of fast break points. Is this one of the Lakers' weaknesses, and how is it that they're going to correct this if they really are going to be a top contender in the West?
I'm not sure right now. You know, I've seen the Lakers play a few times, but I'm not sure what the Lakers' weakness will be. I mean, I think across the board they do have size, so naturally they're going to be probably a little methodical or a little slower when it comes down to certain aspects of the game. But they also have different pieces where you can put in and change the tempo of the game. So I think the Lakers, actually, their strength is their versatility, and it's just about finding those matchups, and it's going to help them be good, you know, throughout the year. But as of right now, I don't see much of a weakness from the Lakers other than sometimes when they do play big and they don't have the great outside scoring or the outside three-point shooting as consistently as they may like.
We knew that Nick Nurse didn't necessarily love his bench, but we knew he was going to have to use them. If it wasn't just because they were going on a long road trip against formidable opponents, now with Kyle out and Serge out, it was a necessity because you just can't run your guys ragged like that. That's not going to lead to success. So out of the bench pieces that we got an extended look at yesterday, in Terrence Davis, who had a few opportunities to prove himself, Chris Boucher, who's been with the team now for a couple years, and then also Rondae Hollis-Jefferson getting his first look with a lot of run. Who really stood out to you?
Chris Boucher stood out. I thought his length helped the Raptors a lot. You know, he made timely shots. And all of the guys, you know, Terry Davis as well. Like, I think, you know, and that's what the team is going to have to rely on now when you do have big pieces out and you're on those long road trips, as you mentioned. People have to step up. And it may not necessarily with this team be that one person, you know, like the Clippers have a Lou Williams or, you know, Houston has a Eric Gordon. It may not be that one person night in and night out, but collectively it's all about timing for your bench. When are they going to make the right plays? What part of the game will they come together? And I think yesterday, last night, they did a great job, multiple people, and it was timely shots, it was timely stops, it was timely rebounds, and, you know, timely possessions where they did a great job collectively. Those people came off the bench. So if it wasn't for those guys, the team wouldn't, it was no chance the Raptors would have won last night.
With Elvin Williams, what can Terrence Davis be for this team this year as the season goes on?
I think he showed he could be a person that comes, bring energy. He's a person that can make shots. You know, I was impressed with him from the very first game when he played the Pelicans at home, game home opener. I thought he was one of the guys that, you know, came in and didn't look rattled. And you know, I must admit that was my first chance of really getting a chance to see him play at that length. But I think he's a guy that can be one of those guys that kind of like a Norm Powell, you know, that can make plays, that can bring the energy, bring a little athleticism, and help the team on multiple fronts. So all it is about being consistent. You know, sometimes you may not get the consistent minutes or you may not get the consistent opportunities, but, you know, if he can be as consistent as possible, that's all you can rely on for young people, newer people on the team, and coming from the bench.
With Ibaka out now, and I know we talk a lot about Gasol's offense and that we need more out of him, but can this team be a consistent winning team with him out of the lineup or with Gasol not having the offensive output that he's done this year? Do they not need more out of him?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, without Serge, you know, Serge had a great year last year, one of his best years, you know, in a while, right? And he was the reason why, a big reason why the Raptors were so successful. You know, he could play in with alongside of Marc Gasol and have a bigger traditional lineup, or he could come in and play the five and stretch it out a little bit with his aggressive defense as well. So without Serge, a piece of the Raptors are missing, and that's when you go back to the bench. You go back to a guy named like Chris and other people where they can come in and do certain things. But the team will have to figure it out the longer the Serge is out, you know, because he does bring an element that not many other people on the team can do, and that's both ways, make that outside shot, you know, be someone that's a force in the paint offensively and defensively.
Alvin Williams is with us, former Raptor, Sportsnet's NBA analyst, our insider for McAlpine Ford Lincoln in Aurora. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Let's continue the conversation about these bigs, and Serge Ibaka brings a lot to the table, but one of the things that we love about him so much is his toughness in the paint. But the Raptors, a lot this year, have struggled with giving up offensive boards. And when other teams are getting 2-3 opportunities on one possession, it's usually not going to end well for you, Alvin. When you see the Raptors giving up a lot of offensive rebounds, what does that tell you about the way that they're playing?
They're not engaged defensively. And I saw the same last year, the games that they had trouble in the series, they had trouble in going to the championship run. They gave up a lot of offensive rebounds. They were getting killed on the boards. But once they locked in defensively, being in position, and usually the rebounds, you know, defensive rebounds come from the defensive side, being in position, you know, staying engaged with your man, being connected to your man so people aren't flying free to get boards. It's not always on the big man per se, but, you know, if your bigs aren't active down there and cleaning everything up in that paint, then, you know, it's going to be tough. And today's NBA is pretty tough because you have a lot of bigs that are away from the basket. You know, offensively, they're switched out, you know, guarding, find themselves having to guard the ball handler more. So they're away from the basket. So that will affect, you know, the defensive rebounding. But you're right. If you give a team in today's NBA or any NBA, you know, 2 or 3 shots at a basket, you're not going to be successful. So defensively, you got to be locked in. You got to be connected to your men. You got to be in position all the time. You got to be engaged, and that will ultimately lead to better rebounding.
Well, and it's not even just the rebounding, too. If you're playing 20 seconds in a shot clock and you're getting a good defensive series out of your team and a shot goes up and your opponent collects the rebound and then they get to go through another 16 to 18 seconds before you get the ball back, it's also demoralizing, and it also takes away your energy on the offensive end. And if you get the ball back and you get an opportunity to go and shoot a three and just say you miss, and then you're back on defense again after a quick shot, it kind of can spiral out of control quite quickly.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's even when you talk at a grassroots level and, you know, AAU level and CYO, is, you know, when you're playing defense and you're trying to get a stop and that ball comes off and the other team gets the ball, and you got to go back. You got to go back to try and play defense. And defense never ends until you collect the basketball. Yeah. So you'll be on defense forever. And then if you're not doing the job on the defensive end, you have to be very efficient on that offensive end when you get your opportunity. You can't, you know, play possession after possession defensively and then you come down and take a quick shot and may miss. And then you're back on defense, to your point. So it can be, you know, psychologically, like, damaging to a team. But it's something that you have to discuss. And that's why I always think, you know, defense is the first thing. You know, you always hear the saying that defense wins championships. defense is the one aspect of the game that you can hold people accountable, you know, every possession, because you're always supposed to be doing something for the team. You know, offensively, you can, you know, kind of do your own thing and everything gets masked when a basket goes in. But defensively, the one thing that you can build your team on just from a mental approach.
With Elvin Williams. So first matchup with Kawhi and the Clippers, it's out in LA, so it's going to have a different feel than when Kawhi comes here, presumably gets his ring and plays on Scotiabank Arena hardwood. But we were debating this earlier in the show, Elvin, and maybe you can chime in as a former player. Is this a bigger game for Kawhi against his old team for whom he played for 1 year? Or is this bigger for the Raptors because Kawhi bolted?
I mean, just looking at it, I'm not sure who's bigger. I don't think it's big for Kawhi at all. I think he's in a position where he wants to be. I think he kind of controlled the whole, you know, his whole time in Toronto, even his departure. So I think for the Raptors, it's something that you want to prove that you can win without Kawhi. You know, people didn't give, once Kawhi decided to go to the Clippers, no one gave the Raptors a chance, you know. So I think it's big for a team. It's big for players who get a chance to play against them. But I think that's the biggest thing. If you are a Raptor, you probably do want to go out and prove that you can beat not only Kawhi, but this great Clippers team that's, you know, a favorite to go to the finals as well. So it should be bigger for the Raptors, I'm thinking.
Okay, there's a debate that I don't really think is a debate, because there's really only one correct answer, and that's that LA is Lakers town, really and truly. That city bleeds gold and purple, and you can even look to ticket prices as a clean-cut way to let you know what that market cares about. You can get an upper bowl seat for a Lakers game, it's like $80 to $90. You can get the exact same seat for a Clippers game, it's like $12. So there really isn't a conversation surrounding it. But playing in that arena, being in that arena, how does the environment change from Lakers and Clippers? Did you lose me? Hello, Alvin.
Phone?
Uh-oh. All right. Maybe we got muted or something like that. I guess we're going to have to take a little a break and maybe reconnect with
this
them.
This interview is over. Thank you.
Thanks for coming out.
Hello?
But the main component of that is there is so much work to do for the Clippers to try and ingratiate themselves into the subconscious of LA basketball fans. And I don't know if there's a way to do it aside from winning a title. And even if you did that, I don't think that that's going to be enough.
But just think of how complicating it is. You got the Dodgers, hugely popular baseball team. You got the Lakers. I mean, that goes without saying. You got football back in the city. Mm-hmm. And then you've got all the other entertainment options and the lifestyle stuff.
And the Kings. I'm saying there's a lot of options. I mean, there's a lot of options. Am I just forgetting about that?
No, I'm not crapping on the Kings. Just they've got a diehard niche fan base, and I don't think it extends beyond that very much. That's all I'm...
There's a lot to compete with, yeah. Is Elvin back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Hey.
I'm sorry I missed you. You were giving me the Lakers-Clippers comparison.
Well, I was just asking what it's actually like to be in Staples Center when you're playing the Clippers versus playing the Lakers. It's crazy how much an environment can change that's the same building, but depending on the fan base, I would imagine that it's a different feel.
Yeah, I mean, it is a different feel, and you touched on this. It's a Lakers town, right? And the celebrities come out for the Lakers game. Everyone comes out for the Lakers. The locals, the celebrities, people fly in for Laker games. And, you know, now that the Clippers are getting attraction, they're getting some momentum with that. You find more of the same environment, but it's nothing comparing to who the Lakers are and the Lakers mean for that, not just that city, for that state, because it's all about the Lakers. It's all about their tradition.
And is that it? Is it just expectation? And that's why things get a little bit more rowdier. That's why people are more passionate about the Lakers. It's because they've felt that success. They've seen the greats that have put on that jersey. So now in the last couple of years, they haven't had the success that people are used to. So is it an expectation thing?
Oh, yeah, for sure. They haven't. It's winning. You know, once again, when you have that strong tradition, and you start looking at the Raptors, right? If you put yourself in anyone's shoes, the Raptors' success, not on a championship level, but even though winning a championship, the expectations are different. I noticed, you know, distinctly that, you know, Raptor fans are more impatient. You know, they're more knowledgeable, but they understand what it's about to win. And once you have that taste of winning, anything less than that is not sufficient, right? It's not good enough for you guys. So that's the biggest thing with the Lakers. The Lakers have been winning throughout the years. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson, Kobe Bryant, you know, Shaq. You know, all these, now they have LeBron and AD. They want to win. They don't know anything else. The Clippers were the team, and if you could get somebody ever to come there, then it's good. We just got one person to look at or two people to look at that's pretty good, Blake Griffin or Chris Paul. But winning wasn't something they're used to. The Lakers is totally different.
You know, I feel the exact same way. I go down to a lot of the Raptors home games and a lot of people ask, and I'm sure you get similar questions. Oh, it's so cool being down there. What's it like being watching the games? And I'm just like, yeah, you know, no offense to the Sacramento Kings, but a random Wednesday early in the season, I'm going home at half because I have other games that I need to watch because I was involved very like out exterior. I was involved in a championship run, and that's me as someone who's a broadcaster in the market who has nothing to do with the team. So the impatience goes from the fans, but also to the players as well. And I think that Toronto's getting their first experience and their first taste of the conversation about, well, you know, you only care about the postseason. You just want to get to the playoffs, and that's when the real season starts. And I don't think in Toronto we've felt that for a long, long time.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and that's being spoiled. I mean, winning does that, right? So, and it's funny, the first game I noticed against the Pelicans, fans were leaving when the game went overtime. The fans were leaving. Yeah. It was a good game. It was a competitive game. It was up and down game, and it was the first game of the season. So I was wondering why fans were like so quick to leave if they had to get to work the next day. But you know, it's just a different expectation when you win, and it's a different environment, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
But every team doesn't have the ability and the fortune to have those winning seasons, especially from a championship level.
Elvin, before we get you out of here, star that you met on the court or near the court in Los Angeles, somebody you hadn't met before, you haven't seen since. Have you ever had an opportunity to have a conversation, big time movie star, music star, whatever the case may be?
Nope, not at all, man.
You were all business.
He's the star. You have to ask that question to the people that met Elvin.
I didn't meet anyone. It was a stretch where I wasn't really playing, so I wasn't really trying to meet people. And then it was a stretch when I started playing, I was trying to be focused. And so it wasn't, but I saw a lot of people that I was, you know, wide eyed. When I saw Halle Berry, I was like, wow, I was in heaven right there. But other than that, man, you see everyone, and it's really fun. And that's why those Sunday games, when you play against the Lakers, they are at home, but you know, everyone goes out to try to kick the Lakers, but same as in the Knicks. When those celebrities go there, it's not that necessarily a home court advantage. It gets the away team really pumped up to perform in front of all those superstars. So it's a fun environment.
Good of you to do this, Elvin. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You
bet.
Bye,
thanks. Elvin Williams hanging in through phone trouble. And Halle Berry is prettier than Jack Nicholson. There's
slightly.
No. No question.
Minutely.
Minutely. Just on the weigh scale. Just
tipping the scales of justice.
A little bit.
I remember the big one for me in L.A. was Pat Sajak was at a couple of games.
Jesus.
Hey,
I don't know.
He's an icon. Pat Sajak isn't an icon?
Yeah. Yes, Scotty. What are you trying to say?
Yeah.
I actually.
What? I'm with you. That's cool.
I mean, I met Pat Sajak at an Angels game once, but I wasn't like, should I have been blown away?
So you weren't starstruck? Like, so I guess game show hosts aren't your thing. You're not going to be blown away if you meet Alex Trebek, Pat Sajak, Steve Harvey,
Richard Dawson.
Are
you going through every Family Feud host now?
I mean, too.
Richard Karn, Al from Home Improvement did Family Feud for a little while too. I mean, let's just do the list.
Have you been starstruck? Like, who have you met where you've been like, wow.
I noticed he was a little in awe when he came into guest host with me earlier this year.
That was tough
for me because it's just like, stop, Scott. Like, I'm just like you. Yeah. There's nothing special.
Just a microphone in front of our face. I can't. I mean, I have to put some thought into that. It's not like I hang around famous people very much. I mean, I met you. But
Okay, if you don't want to answer that one, then who?
It's not that I don't want to answer. It's I'm trying to think, like, who am I starstruck by? I ended up...
Maybe as a baseball player when you were younger?
I ended up in the same room once in the Bahamas at a kind of a bigger family party. Sean Connery was in the room. Does that count?
Oh, that's pretty neat. The Rock's such a good movie.
That would be really cool. Are you kidding me?
So that would be, I was like, holy crap, that's Bond.
That's good. I was in a room with Oprah.
That would be cool.
And by a room, I mean a theater at TIFF. But I was close to the stage.
She was on screen or in the room?
She was in the room.
Oh my God, there's Oprah.
So I was watching her TV show. No, she was in the room.
Okay.
She's in the room.
Okay.
At TIFF. Major motion picture event.
All right. Are we up against the clock?
Why? What's your story?
No. You have a good story? One.
Make it good. And we're not up against anything.
Talking about starstruck people, I've had a girlfriend one time. She always wanted
to meet. Had a girlfriend one time? That's so crazy.
And we were at the your Bahamas thing brought, and I know you don't want to hear this.
No,
but
I do.
What's the story?
I'm trying, but Ashley's giving me the look like I can't wait to see where this one goes, and I'm panicking now. Okay. But she wanted to meet Nick Lachey, and a friend of a friend knew him, and we kind of went over there, and she couldn't get a word out. So that was kind of funny. So that's why I always ask people about who the stars are from. And
Nick Lachey was a big deal. 98 Degrees, his reality show with Jessica Simpson. Chicken of the Sea, Tuna. That was a big deal, that show.
And there I had questions, but I felt like it wasn't the time by the pool in a hotel.
Well, you needed to step in and speak because your girlfriend apparently
couldn't
get words
and
out around.
And then she left me for Nick Lachey. And then her return flight was not with me. Yeah.
Goodbye. Toronto FC falls 3-1 in the MLS Cup Final to the Seattle Sounders. We will recap that. And the Maple Leafs do not perform again in front of their backup goaltender. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Oddsshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Oddsshark.net has those too, and it's free. Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks. Whether you want to get in on the football action, tonight's hockey game, or anything in between, go to oddsshark.net. This is not a gambling site.
Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Well, the goalie goat chant is filling the building here, and they're responding so far. Into the corner, Tavares can't get to it. Flipped up on the wing, saw it, loses the puck, chance in front of the goal! Oh my, what a chance! The net was empty and no penalty. Hawks bring it back. Tang center, they score!
The fifth goal, you know, looking back on that, you know, that one stings a bit. You know, that's one, you know, a big save in the third period that you'd like to come up with, knowing how well the guys are pushing in the third period. So, you know, it's unfortunate that I wasn't able to make that save to give us a chance to, you know, come away with a disappointment.
Not good enough starts with myself. So, you know, leaving our goalie out to dry, one of the best players in the league coming down the slot uncovered, untouched, and just made it too easy for them. And then the rest of the game, we played hard, we competed. Structure was much better, and we gave ourselves a great opportunity. We just can't start like we did, and like I said, it starts with me.
So the backup goalie is blaming himself, and the captain of the team is blaming himself and the team and not the goalie for the Leafs' loss in Chicago last night.
The first one went off a skate.
Yep.
You can't really, but it just gets them started off the wrong foot. I mean, it's just, you can't start games like that. It's just,
off the
it's
wrong
poor.
Foot, but what, you know, no, that was funny.
Did you like
good.
That one?
I okay, did. Yeah. It was good.
I'm glad somebody's paying so attention good. This morning.
You didn't do that intentionally. Don't take credit
what?
For it. Did you do it?
No.
No chance.
I was going to give you credit for it.
I tell you that Ottawa's north of Toronto, and this is the treatment I get now.
You don't think I'm credible? I just gave very specific and relevant geographic information, and you don't think I'm a credible source?
Mr. Maps over here?
Continue, sorry.
Anyways, it's the wrong way to start these games, and I know it's a bad bounce, but you don't start when the puck drops and plays like that happen. You can say they're unlucky bounces, but a lot of your luck is related to your play. And when people talk about, oh, it's a lucky bounce, it's this, it's that, you create your own luck. And when you're working hard, a lot of times I found myself in a game, if I'm a guy I'm moving my feet, I'm putting pucks on net, I'm playing the right way, I'm playing our systems, good things happen to me when I was playing. And that's everybody, right? So when you see a guy like, oh, how does this guy always get lucky? It's because he's always in the right position. He plays the game the right way. He works hard. He's engaged. That's what happens. And it's almost one of those things where if you say, well, the Leafs are getting unlucky in this situation, that situation, most of the time, it's because you're not doing the good things you need to do.
57 shots on goal. So, I mean, good Lord. But 26 of those were in the third period, and it was 4-1 Chicago heading into the third. That's, look, the oversimplification, and maybe I'm bang on, maybe I'm halfway there, overly simplifying it, but you got an inferior team with a 3-goal lead. And the Blackhawks are the inferior team on paper in last night's game. I'm not talking about how last night's game was played. The Toronto Maple Leafs are a better hockey team than the Chicago Blackhawks. Finite, end of story. So you've got the inferior team protecting a 3-goal lead. They're not pushing the pace. They're trying to whittle that 20 minutes a clock down to zero before the Toronto Maple Leafs push their way back into the hockey game. And it almost blew up in Chicago's faces, but it didn't. And that's why I think the shot clock was as skewed as it was. The Leafs turned it on in the third period against a team that was just trying to sit back, protect the lead.
And that's a fragile team over there. They've had a bit of a rough start. I don't want to say they're rebuilding because they have a lot of those older players from...
They got bad contracts in some cases.
And they can't get rid of guys. Seabrook's been a healthy scratch. So they have that. Goaltending has been okay this year for them. So when you have a team that's not good with holding leads, yeah, you're going to throw 26... What do they get? 25 shots in the third? So it's one of those things where you see the shot clock, and most of the time when you get 50 shots on net, you're not going to lose too many of them. But if you want to talk about stats and analytics, just because you outshoot teams, you don't exactly have the best team in the league. When you have the most puck possession, you don't have the best team in the league. There's a lot of different aspects to a game. And when you look at just at numbers, you can't paint the whole picture.
No, and you can't do it with one statistic either, because even if you have a team that gets an abundance of shots on goal, are they high danger opportunities? Where are the shots coming from? Are they donuts coming from the point? Not even really through traffic because you don't have someone camped out in front of the goalie. The Leafs did a lot of that last year, and that was the conversation about Frederik Andersen and not only the game volume that he was playing, the amount of shots he was facing on a nightly basis. And everyone said he was fine with the amount of volume. He liked it. He felt like it was more engaged. But then you take a deeper dive, and it's not high danger chances. The Leafs are doing a pretty good job last season of keeping everyone outside, not really letting any cross-crease stuff happen. And then when you do, you expect Frederik Andersen to have one or two of those signature saves that we've come to depend on in Leafs wins, even when they're getting outplayed. I think this next stretch without Mitch Marner is going to be a really big test to prove finally that maybe it's John Tavares who was driving that line. And although there's a million things to say about Mitch Marner, and listen, just because we say we prefer one style of player, we think one person is more responsible for the success of a given line on the Toronto Maple Leafs, it doesn't mean that we're disparaging the other person. But the conversation about John Tavares goes back to his time with the New York Islanders. Matt Molson, Kyle Okpozo, P.A. Parenteau,
Josh Bailey.
These were all players that were direct beneficiaries of playing with John Tavares. So who's it going to be? Moore or Kapanen? If one of these two guys absolutely spikes in terms of their playing, I think it's just another notch under the John Tavares lineman tree, if we talk about coaching tree and stuff like that, of the people that he impacted successfully. And then you have your answer of who's the most valuable between John Tavares and Mitch Marner, which is something that we do love to debate based on the contract that they've been given.
Well, you saw Kerfoot move up to the Tavares line, and that's when I'm a winger and I see the third line center get bumped up, that's like a wake-up call for me. That means I've given a chance and I'm not playing well right now. So Kerfoot has played great this year. I thought he's really adapted to the new systems, the new surroundings with the Leafs. But when you're a winger and you get a chance with Tavares, and then all of a sudden your centerman gets bumped up, it's one of those situations where you have to look yourself in the mirror and you have to bring more to your game.
Well, speaking of the Leafs, how would you like to fly on board the Air Canada fan flight to see the Leafs play in Florida in January? Stay tuned during Good Show between 9 and noon or go to sportsnet.ca/590 for details. There was a championship game played involving a local team yesterday. 3-1, the Seattle Sounders beat Toronto FC out west to claim the MLS Cup. For Seattle, that's their second in 4 years. Of course, Toronto, Seattle have played three of the last four MLS Cups. They got us in 16, and yesterday we got them in 17. Two guys your heart breaks for. Quentin Wisberg, the goaltender, and Justin Morrow for the own goal. The 1-0 goal that puts Seattle ahead. And what are you going to do in that situation? I saw Greg Vanney's reaction. It's just bad luck. There's nothing he could have done.
I mean, there's an element of luck and good fortune surrounding this TFC team. I forget which player it was, but they said it's almost like we've played three seasons in one. And of course, with MLS, there are the Canadian championships. There are all these different qualifiers. Like, the season is very, very stop and go. But lately, in the last third of the season, it was like it was a new TFC team. But having to play on the road so often, having to go up against really formidable opponents, you felt as though this was a team of destiny to a certain extent, but it didn't give you the same feels as like the Washington Nationals. You were like, wow, they really got over another hump. Is it going to last? It doesn't feel like it's going to last. And then, yeah, against Seattle, it didn't really feel as though they were kind of destined to be that team this year because they had already done so much that was above and beyond the expectations that at least I had and outsiders had looking in on them. But for me, the biggest takeaway was the environment. 70,000 strong. And yeah, there were some TFC supporters sprinkled in there, but the noise, I'm sure the intelligence level of fans surrounding this team and the support that they had, man, it's really, really nice to see because I remember even just a few years ago, you weren't sure how different markets are going to receive their team. I believe the Ottawa Furies just folded in Major League Soccer, so you're not really sure which markets are going to hit, but obviously soccer has just been a fantastic thing in Seattle.
Atlanta FC is what a...
They have the highest attendance, and they're like one of the newest teams.
And they play in the Falcons Stadium in the same way that the Sounders play in the Seahawks Stadium, drawing tremendously. So this is the build of this league that is, what, about a quarter of a century old now, you know, coming in 20, 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. This is the build. This is the generational build of a professional sports league unfolding before our eyes. You always wonder, I wonder what my great-grandparents experienced with the NHL or the NBA or Major League Baseball. Well, we're watching it unfold with Major League Soccer.
Yeah, and if you were talking about, I mean, that stuck out for me, 70,000 people. It looked like a great atmosphere. But if you want to talk about the FC briefly, I thought they outplayed them for the first 55, 60 minutes.
Bad luck.
And it's one of those things where if you don't put a team away when you get the opportunity, it's almost, I don't want to say it was on Toronto, but Seattle that's one of those teams. They're so experienced and they have the team. They know when to hang around games and when their opportunity comes. But yes, was it an unlucky play? What, did it get kind of blocked the first one, then goes off a second defender in? Like, that's your own goal. And it's a tough situation because they played so well in the first half.
It's disappointing to lose, but it was not at all a disappointing season for Toronto FC. Sour taste at the end, but a huge, huge build through the second half of the year to get them through the playoffs and to the MLS Cup final. You could win one of 50 $500 prize packs and qualify for a grand prize sports weekend getaway, including tickets to see both Toronto teams back-to-back with the VTech Wake Up Call. Give us a call at 416-413-4141. Leave us your best Toronto sports take and set your alarms every Friday morning at 8:20. And that's when we'll select the VTech Wake Up Call. Visit sportsnet.ca/590 for details. It's Remembrance Day, and we will pay tribute next.
Missed an episode of Lead Off? Listen to every episode and subscribe with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on Demand.
Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
today is Remembrance Day, and it is an opportunity for all of us to do just that, to remember, to reflect, and to be thankful of those who gave their lives. And if they happen to survive, gave a significant part of themselves in the fight for us, in the fight for our futures, fight for our present. And I don't want to overly personalize this, but I do want to mention that my grandfather was a medical officer in the Second World War, and his ship was torpedoed by a German submarine approximately a kilometer off the shore of Normandy on D-Day. This was something he never talked about, didn't want to discuss it. I, quite frankly, am respectful of that and understand why. He has long since passed. But he swam to shore among the bobbing bodies of many of his friends and fellow soldiers. He was my paternal grandfather, William John Campbell MacArthur. My maternal grandfather, Obrey William Thomas Nichols, who has also passed away, served in the Pacific Rim post-Second World War in Japan as that country rebuilt, and carved for himself a career in the Canadian military that spanned three decades, leading to his retirement in 1975. He was a leader. Both of these men, who loved me dearly and loved my brother dearly, loved their families dearly, were men who fought for freedom. And so today we remember anyone of any race, creed, or gender who died in or who survived harrowing circumstances while fighting fascism, racism, xenophobia, and indescribable cruelty in all of its forms, whether that be actions, deeds, and words. And we speak out and stand up against these evils because they still do exist. So to my two grandfathers, may they rest in peace, thank you. And to anyone who served in any theater, thank you.
Very well said, Scotty. That was really nice. I think that we all know that anytime you're engaged in a battle of any sort, you're never going to be able to do it alone. It takes a conscious effort of everyone coming together and fighting for what's right and doing it as a large group. So we're all wearing our poppies today, but there are a number of ways to donate to the veterans. You can go online and you can get a digital poppy, which means you won't get a physical copy. But all of the money that you donated, whether it's $2, $4, $20, whatever you can afford, that money will go to help support veterans all year long. And that's one of the reasons that the Poppy Drive is so important.
So few who fought in the Second World War are still with us. And we are so grateful for their service as we are for those who served in the First World War. And they, as we know, have all passed on. We are back at 6 o'clock. Tomorrow morning, Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus with Good Show, and it starts next.